This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Special Edition, Justice Society, World War II.
Trumpet man from all Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowin' reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy.
Hello, welcome to my Fanboy Special Edition Justice Society World War II. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. The Animation Brain Trust has reconvened after only a week off. Paul Montgomery.
Hello. Hi.
And Dr. Ryan Haupt is out of surgery.
Good evening from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
And we are here to talk about Justice Society World War II, the latest DC Universe animated original film. Paul, which number is it?
It's 41.
41.
In the DC Universe animated original movie line.
And there'll be spoilers in this conversation. It's basically feature length. It's an hour 24.
And 84 minutes.
We're all excited. We're all big JSA fans. When they announced this, we all couldn't believe it. I guess we have The Rock to thank for it, since the JSA are going to be characters in his Black Adam film. And I'm still kind of in shock this movie happened.
I feel like Geoff Johns and other people behind the scenes have been pushing to the Justice Society in various ways.
Right.
Like, you know, we're not long-suffering Justice Society fans. We've gotten some JSA in our media and all the different TV shows.
This is true. They are characters on Stargirl. And they were on Smallville. But
yeah.
Comics wise, Paul, it's been a decade long. I don't want to say drought, but near drought.
Yeah, I mean, sort of back when I discovered iFanboy, when I pioneered the Frapper Map Frontiers and found iFanboy. I was big into the JSA then, and then it was
one of DC's best books for years. Ryan was also a believer.
Yep.
And then they got shunted to the side at the New 52 reboot in 2011, which was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They had their own book called Earth 2 for a while. Didn't really have the same feeling.
Intentionally so. They were trying something new.
And then that didn't work, and they kind of went away. They made a brief appearance in Scott Snyder's Metal story, which had some cool issues. And they made a brief appearance in some awesome Hawkman issues recently. But for the most part, not super in the mainstream of DC Comics. But that doesn't matter. We're here to talk about the film. And the first thing I think is interesting is back when Ryan and I reviewed Superman Man of Tomorrow, the first film post the Flashpoint change in the line. You know, they had that long line of films that were in a shared universe, and they were very much based in the early days in the New 52, but then they had Flashpoint, and they sort of got rid of that. Not Flashpoint, it was What was the Apocalypse story? What was
Apocalypse
it
War? Was that what it's called?
Right. They basically
Dark Side War. One of those.
They basically Flashpointed out the world. The Flash ran off to go back to Flashpoint to fix everything, and then that ended. And then we got Superman Man of Tomorrow, which had a very distinct look, different than the previous films, new younger cast. And we were wondering on that show that we talked about the film if this was indeed the new shared universe. They hadn't really said. And I don't want to put any stakes in the ground, but this film takes place in that same world. So maybe it is the new shared universe.
You were right the first time, Ryan. It's Apocalypse War.
Yeah, Apocalypse War.
That's what we're
doing.
Yeah.
So this one takes place in the same world. You've got Superman opening the film as played by Darren Criss. It has that same Flash animation look with the heavy black line outlines. It takes place in the early days of the superheroing the DC Universe as Barry Allen comes to Metropolis on a little vacation with Iris.
Oh, you're just skipping right over FDR. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying that's the world we're living in. Is this shared universe with the Superman film? That's all I'm saying. We can go back. But
are you sure? I don't know if I agree with that.
It seemed to be. It was Darren Criss playing Superman. They wouldn't cast the same guy unless it was the shared universe.
I didn't see any evidence of that. But
well, I don't. I think it's probably true. But
they would cast a different actor if it wasn't meant to be the same.
Yeah. But then, you don't have to have watched that one.
No, not at all. I'm just saying it takes place in the same world, that's all.
Yeah.
As an early Superman. Anyway, loved the opening with FDR getting the briefing on the Justice Society prior to their entrance into the war. He gets the full rundown of each character. I kept, for some reason, even though I've gotten a million PR emails about this movie and know everything about it beforehand, for some reason, I kept expecting Alan Scott to be in that briefing, but he wasn't.
Right.
But we have J. Garrick Flash. We have Carter Hall Hawkman. We have Hourman. We have Black Canary. And we have Wonder Woman as the team leader. And that's sort of your Rex Tyler Hourman and Diana Lance Black Canary.
Yeah, and it is Diana as Wonder Woman, not Hippolyta.
Right. And so that's your
sometimes you your swap team. Them out.
And they are going to be sent into the war to stop Hitler, who is chasing not only world domination, but also these mystical artifacts like the Ark of the Covenant, which was a real thing that happened. He was really into the occult and wanted to find those artifacts. So, love the open, loved the credit sequence, which was like a film. It had the actors, on screen, which is something that they almost never do. I don't think they've maybe never done that.
It was so fun. It was so old timey.
Yeah.
Like a newsreel.
Looked like a newsreel. And then we get ready to action in the present day in which, like I said, Barry and Iris go to Metropolis on a little romantic vacation. Of course, Brainiac attacks, which causes the first Flash Superman team up in that world. And in the course of trying to save Superman from a kryptonite bullet, the Flash runs really, really fast and ends up going back in time to the 1940s through the help, I guess, of Dr. Fate.
Or does he?
And that leads to the modern-day Barry Allen team up with the Justice Society as they fight the Nazis. Overall, thoughts? Overall, what did you guys think? Feelings?
I think this was a sort of messy script, but like it's not. It wasn't as tight as some of these are, but fun and had things that genuinely surprised me.
Yes.
Like it was, oh.
There's a twist reveal that genuinely I was surprised by.
There's a couple of them in there. An Aquaman one where I felt like a normal viewer who's like doesn't know comic books or anything. It was just like watching one was like, oh, that's bad.
And we know they're not viewers. I enjoyed this. I had fun with it. I really enjoy seeing movies where some of these lesser known characters get a moment in the spotlight. I had issues. I'm not without issues on this one, so I think this will be a good discussion because I have plenty of things to talk about that I liked and a few things that I have that are a little bit more critical thoughts.
Yeah, I think my feelings are along your both lines. I thought I really liked the first two acts a lot, and it's almost the same review as the Superman Man of Tomorrow, including the kaiju fight at the end.
Yeah.
Which I was a little like, wait a minute, we're doing this again? We just did this.
We gotta do something about the kaiju.
I thought the first two acts that was basically really focused on the JSA in Europe fighting the Nazis was terrific. I loved everything about it. I loved the characters. I loved the voices. I loved the characterizations. I loved the slightly different Hawkman, who was a little bit like Black Adam. I loved his relationship with Black Canary. Whether or not it was romantic or not, you can decide for yourself. I loved everything about it. Then they left that part, and they were going to go to America on a submarine, and they run into Aquaman and his angry Atlanteans, and I was like, oh, I don't really like this as much. And then it still had great character stuff, but then it turned into a big kaiju fight, and I was like, oh, we just did this in the same shared universe movie. Literally, we just did this. And so then I thought the first two acts, I was like, this is incredible. I love this movie. And then the third act, I was like,
if you love some Nazi punching,
yeah,
and they're nice enough to do it without a bunch of quips in it too.
Yeah.
I thought I was very impressed that
they gave it the weight that it deserves.
They gave it the weight and they came up with new and fun ways of punching Nazis and it just focused on the action and they weren't falling back on the crutch of dialogue, right, of making jokes and things like that. So that was really, I thought, wholesome and good.
It was great. And I thought the fight choreography and those things, you know, especially the way Jay Garrick would run around and punch Nazis really fast, was great.
There's some great sound effects too.
Black Canary's powers were used in a fun way. And I loved Wonder Woman. You know, she's very much the Gal Gadot Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman is awesome. Stana Katic.
Yeah.
Doing a thick Eastern European accent for Wonder Woman. It's a slightly different characterization, but I was trying to think, even if you account for the recent live action stuff, I mean, there's some good Wonder Woman action in those, aside from her just like blowing apart sides of buildings for no reason. I feel like this is one of the best showcases for just Wonder Woman's raw strength.
Yeah.
Like, she is powerful in this. Like, this puts Wonder Woman over in this movie. Like, she has a fight with Aquaman later on, and she's doing the thing where, like, she, you know, wraps her thighs around his head and like does the twist thing, and sometimes, and you just think of the Simpsons for that. But like, this was like, no, that would hurt if she did that to you. Just very physical stuff and thoughtful choreography.
There was a whole sequence in the beginning that was very reminiscent of the World War One famous trench scene in the first film, where she goes out in slow motion against her by herself against tanks and Nazis with machine guns, and she takes them all out methodically and brutally. And even had a very similar score. It was very consciously.
They're definitely
recalling.
Going on that Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, and like I said, the characterization of her. And is this the first time we've seen her like this kind of accented Wonder Woman in animation?
In animation, maybe. Since I mean, the closest would be like the New Frontier Wonder Woman. She's not accented there, but
what I mean is post Gal Gadot. Like, this is like the first one where like they're really going in on that movie characterization, which I think is great because it's a good one. Ryan, did you like the Europe scenes, the sequences there?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's just good, solid, fun World War II Nazi punch in action. I did like that. I felt like they almost leaned into all the characters who are blonde and blue eyed. Like, everyone just assumes they're Nazis. Like, Wonder Woman's like, Barry Allen, you must be a Nazi. She's like, he has to prove himself so many times before she's like, all right, I guess you're not a Nazi, you Aryan fast guy.
Basically, she's like picking him up by the scruff of his neck. And like,
I thought it was very clever. The whole Shakespeare thing. I thought we were going to get some Alfred Pennyworth World War II action. And I was bummed we did not.
They got me. I feel stupid for getting got because it's Superman, but the big reveal is their embedded reporter, who they call Shakespeare, is Clark Kent, and you wonder, well, how is that possible? As part of the mystery reveal later, but they got me.
Yeah, and then he mentions like his Jonathan and Martha Kent, were his parents. They died. He was raised in an orphanage, and you're like, how does this skew with the timeline?
Well, so in the earliest comics. For folks who haven't read all the Golden Age stuff, Clark Kent is raised in an orphanage. Jonathan and Martha Kent are not introduced until later. It's a bit of a retcon that Clark Kent was raised by the Kindly Farm couple. And so they shifted it slightly to say that Jonathan and Martha died, and that's why he went to the orphanage, where in the original comics, he actually was the ship was recovered by an orphanage, and that's where he was raised the whole time. So that actually was kind of a cool callback to some very early Superman mythology, which I thought was cool. But is the... Yeah, so...
I thought the script was really good for the first two acts. Like, stuff like that was smart. I loved Hawkman. He was sort of more reserved. Normally, they make Hawkman, like, really bellicose and angry.
Yeah.
And here, he's sort of very reserved. In my notes,
he's, like, really soft-spoken.
Yeah. I liked that a lot. He was great. Mm-hmm. And I love his partnership with Dinah.
It was jarring and carried a big face.
Yeah. Played by Omid Abtahi. Who's a face you recognize from a lot of things. He was really good. Again, I really liked the partnership with Dinah. It was you don't normally get that team up, but
yeah,
that was great. So the question becomes, how is Barry going to get home? And also, what's happening is that he and Jay have reduced powers because they're both pulling from the Speed Force, even though Barry doesn't know about the Speed Force. Again, this is very early on in their careers.
That was another thing that got in my head that I couldn't get rid of. Is why did Barry Allen name himself The Flash if this is a world where Barry Allen wasn't inspired by the Jay Garrick comics?
Because he goes fast.
That's not chicken and egg thing.
And that's the question, is he doesn't know who these people are, right? So
a transparent aluminum thing.
Right, maybe. Yeah, exactly. So he doesn't know who these characters are. He doesn't know who Wonder Woman is. Wonder Woman's Diana Prince. So the whole time you're thinking, wait a minute, well, how does that mean there's no Diana Prince in the present, or is she just immortal? And so in his attempt to get home, they run into Dr. Fate, who's being held captive in a Bavarian castle. And who was the little blonde character they never identified?
Was that supposed to be Commandy?
That's what I thought.
It looks Commandy-esque.
But... Commandy's not immortal.
The Superman shirt, which ties in with the Commandy short, which is also on the disc. Commandy's
not immortal.
Right. But he maybe he got. But he wouldn't have to be immortal. He'd have to get thrown back in time.
And it wasn't the whole shirt. It was the uniform, the whole Superman uniform.
Right.
Anyway, the point is,
I know it's not a direct thing, yeah. But I thought like
I don't know. I thought it was supposed to be somebody, but they never said who it was. It was a very small cast of characters.
That sequence where they're in the castle really made me want a JSA Wolfenstein style game.
That's exactly where my head went when they did the establishing shot of like basically Castle Wolfenstein. I was like, oh, this is going to be a cool like final showdown in Castle Wolfenstein. And then, no, we're doing kaiju stuff again.
No, there's a whole other act to go. So the reveal at the castle is twofold. One is that Shakespeare is Superman. And I cannot tell you how disappointed I was that when he shows up later on, he still didn't have the mustache. He shaved
the mustache.
I was like, we're going to get some sweet Clark Gable Superman action, and it was not to be. And then the reveal.
Do we think that's any kind of a joke about the
Henry Cavill? I hadn't put that together, but maybe. That's funny. Possibly. That's a good thought, Paul. I like that.
And then the other reveal, the big one, is that Barry didn't run into the past. He ran to Earth 2. So, as we know also from the comics, the JSA was on Earth 2 versus JLA. Of course, everyone thinks they're Earth 1, but...
Also to France. He ran to France as well.
Right, France and Earth 2. So that's why he's never heard of the JSA. That's why Wonder Woman is here and not, you know, in his present. So that's the big reveal there.
Yeah, there's kind of like a little bit of convolution there that it's like a few plot contrivances just to... I don't know.
See, it's frustrating because they recognize early in act, like right when he gets back in time, the scientist characters, Our Man and Jay Garrick, are both just like, okay, we fully accept this guy's from the future, so we have to take all the necessary precautions.
Right.
I know not we live in a society where taking precautions is not, you know, it's not in vogue right now, but sometimes you take precautions so that bad things don't happen. It's right. This thing we do sometimes. And they're like all about not messing up the future by making sure Barry Allen is contained. And then they kind of like just drop that when they come to the realization that he's from an alternate future and not their future necessarily. But they seem to just kind of take that on faith in a way that I was like, man, this is a lot of hand waving.
First off, how dare you for bringing We Live in a Society to this podcast? This is a wholesome place. Two, Ryan, how did you feel when Jay described the Speed Force as being like photosynthesis?
I mean, I did. That's not in my head canon. That's not how the Speed Force works. But I also understand that Jay Garrick is coming from a 1940s level of, you know, science education, even as a well-educated person. So I'll accept Jay's. That's his theory. It's sort of like that idea that there were some Jedi that did believe that midichlorians were
stop.
Where the Force came from. No, but, like, those Jedi were just wrong.
Hit you on the nose with a rolled up newspaper. No.
Listen, Jay got his powers from hard water.
That's right.
So
they needed to mention that more.
And listen, it's convoluted, but I like the idea of incorporating Earth 1, Earth 2, because that's a very classic DC idea. And they wanted to figure out a way to inspire the modern heroes without having them take place in the past. It wasn't the most elegant, but the reveal struck me. Yeah, I literally went, whoa, on the couch when I was watching it when they announced that.
Yeah. It wasn't the biggest science faux pas I had at watching this.
Okay.
The biggest science faux pas was, I'm pretty sure you can't throw depth charges up and still have them explode.
Yeah.
Pretty sure they only explode at depth.
Depth, yeah. Mm. They're not like grenades. They're designed to go off at a certain depth of water, but that's fine.
Yeah.
But
so I was like, I don't think that would work.
Before I forget, the science thing that did bother me was the crab kaiju.
I am such a fan of fast crab. I call him fast crab.
It was pretty funny. Yeah, the crab chasing Jay Garrick was pretty funny.
It was just like they zoomed him across the screen. Like he just zoomed through buildings.
I mean, I know this is
they didn't animate the little spinnerets.
They didn't, like, the way it was animated was so cheap that it made it look like somebody had taken, like, bad stop motion and dropped it in the middle of this animated movie we were watching. And I just, oh, man, Fast Crab is my favorite new character in this whole thing.
Looked ridiculous.
I had so much fun with Fast Crab. I love a crab that can keep up with the Flash.
So they free Dr. Fate. They find out that Shakespeare is Clark Kent and he's Superman. Defeat the Nazis in that base. They decode this code, which is why they had Dr. Fate. They find the coordinates to the Bermuda Triangle, so they go there in a submarine, and that's where the movie kind of goes off the rails a little bit. And they run into some Atlanteans who save them from the depth charge grenades, and they go to. I was kind of annoyed that they just named this guy Advisor. He was never a character, but
yeah,
they meet Aquaman's evil advisor.
That was something I wanted to look up. Like, is there a one-off character from like the 40s that's just called the Advisor?
Maybe.
And he's just like a super powerful telepathic influencer or something.
I feel like I've listened to enough Tom Versus podcasts I would know.
You would know.
He's basically worm tongue to Aquaman. Aquaman's been taken over.
It's more like he's a. Like a trope. He's worm tongue.
A Jafar type.
Yeah. They have to deal with the fact that at first the Atlanteans seem like they're going to help them, but in fact, Aquaman is, and I'll be honest, a very disturbing scene hails Hitler.
Yeah.
With the hand and everything.
Yeah, the thing.
And
that's
I'm sitting
up.
There in my living room. Oh, no.
And so the Aquaman and the Atlanteans are tools of the Nazis, and that leads to a giant fight, I guess, in Florida. With the JSA and Flash.
They said Eastern Seaboard. That was all they said.
Well, that would be the other point on the triangle, so I assume it's where they were. And then.
And all the while I'm thinking Superman about landlocked Germany.
Yeah.
And their relationship with Atlantis.
Well, they had to get across to the East.
Yeah.
Anyway, then they fight. Then that's when the giant kaiju shows up, and I literally went, oh, come on. And
it is the, like, one of the featured kaiju from Pacific Rim. It is that kaiju.
Well, there's three kaiju. There's the manta ray one. Then there's like the walking octopus, and then there's fast crab.
Well, the big one.
Yeah, the big one's walking octopus.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a lot going on, but it led to some good things. I thought, like, I really liked the Hawkman's death scene with. Yep. Black Canary, and then her reaction to it was really, really great, I thought. I loved any time that Barry and Jay worked together.
Yeah. This movie makes a strong case for the whole, if you had the Flash on your team, everyone else is almost redundant. Like, you kind of just need them for distraction until Flash has time to deal with everything. Like, it's good that they depowered both Flashes a little bit, because otherwise they really didn't need much help.
Guys, I love Hourman with imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
I just love Hourman.
It's like, I'm just so useless. I'm only good for an hour. And
I love the idea of, like, your team has Captain America for an hour at a time once a day, and yes, that's it. And then Captain America goes away.
And the question is, when to take the pill, right? Is it too early? Is it too late?
Oh, like, I would be so bad with that power set, because I would be the guy who's holding out. Like, my arm would be falling off, and people would be like, Ryan, take the pill. We need you for the hour. I'd be like, no, there might be something worse in 2 hours. Right.
It's very much like a Dungeons & Dragons construct, where it's like, do I use one of my transformations now? Do I go berserker now, or wait?
Yeah. Right.
How much longer is this session?
Are we going to get a short rest or a long rest?
Right. So, there's also a great moment where the flying manta ray falls onto Steve Trevor's tank or something. Mm-hmm. I didn't rewind it to check, but I think in that moment, Steve Trevor goes, shit. Like, he says the weirdest line read just as this monster falls on him.
So Steve Trevor dies in the fight. Hawkman dies in the fight.
Not from that. He gets impaled by the Trident. Right,
but in the giant fight, advisor. In the giant battle, he gets killed by the advisor. Yeah. So
Steve Trevor, voiced by Chris Diamantopoulos, the a.k.a. Isotope from Invincible.
Yes.
And 15 other characters from...
Well, sure, but I mean, that, I think we all know.
I'm just saying, that guy is amazing. Isotope's the real star. He does a lot of different parts in season one of Invincible.
I thought, great voice cast. I thought Matt Bomer was a great Flash. I thought Darren Criss is good Superman. Stana Katic is a great Wonder Woman.
I've only seen Matt Bomer in season 3 of The Sinner. I have no other. He was good, but I would never have thought to cast him as Superman, and he did a pretty good job.
No, he was Flash.
He was Flash.
Flash. Oh, sorry, my apologies. Yes, Flash.
Matthew Mercer was Hourman.
A lot of pros here. A lot of folks.
No clunkers.
Have done this thing a bunch of times, like video games, animation.
No clunkers and a very tight cast. Armin Taylor was Jay Garrick. Alicia Rotaro was Black Canary.
I have one criticism of the Black Canary. It's not her performance. It is the sometimes when they do animated versions of characters who have like sonic powers, the sonicness of it feels completely artificial. And in this movie, they chose that option as opposed to, I have a preference to when someone with a power set like Black Canary, I want it to actually sound like the character yelling. And they didn't do that. And they end up leaning pretty heavily into her powers. And I think you could have even found story reasons for it to shift from being a more artificial sounding power to a more visceral human.
Oh, for it sounding like a sound effect and not just her voice.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And no, I do.
Absolute nitpick. It's just whenever I see a character with a power like that, I think it loses a bit of its humanity to have it kind of just sound like a sound effect, artificial, as opposed to that character actually yelling in anguish or fury or just
And so with the day saved and Aquaman turned back to good, Jay Garrick thrusts Barry back into the Speed Force where he returns.
I really liked the little shove Jay gave Barry while they're running together. Get out of here, kid.
And then he returns right when he leaves in a Back to the Future type moment. And this is, I think, the most false note in the whole movie was he catches the bullet meant for Superman, turns around, and throws it right into Brainiac's head and kills him. And both Superman and he go, cool, good job, we saved the day. Like Superman, who doesn't want to kill people, despite what Zack Snyder says, was like, great job, Flash. I'm like, he just murdered Brainiac. Like, I get, you know, he was Brainiac.
Like,
Brainiac,
it's Brainiac. Like, it's, you know, he's not. I mean, in this, he looks like a space ghost villain in this. Like he looks like an old man. Yeah. Like, there's a bunch of different takes. We've seen so many in these past 41 movies. We've probably seen at least 17 versions of Brainiac.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love seeing different versions of Brainiac. But, like, yeah, he throws that thing into his brain. Like, that thing goes right between the eyes, basically. Yeah. And I don't know if the thought maybe in the script was, like, oh, he's going to be more of a robot. But, like, when you throw something, like, have a hero throw a bullet into somebody's, like...
forehead.
Humanoid-looking head.
No, he's bleeding. Like, it wasn't a robot. It was. He laid there, and he has blood coming out of that wound. Like, it was.
I mean, it is a kill shot, though. And, like, it was like, whoa, a little bit of gravity here.
Yeah,
before was, we just high five.
And they sort of high five, and they decide they're
going to have a club,
form the Justice League, and
it's that. Will say, even though it's a jarring transition between the two things, it's very adorable when they form their club. It is very like fourth grade.
Did you guys like Barry's costume? More specifically, the mask.
Future Boy's costume?
Future Boy's costume, sorry. Future Boy.
I thought he looked weird in some shots because of the mask. If that's what you're getting at.
I didn't mind the nose. That's
leading
the nose.
Yeah, the mouth. But like the whole mouth opening has too many angles.
That was my main problem. Yeah. The nose was very reminiscent of the Flash costume from the 90s TV show, which I didn't necessarily hate. But then it had too many cutouts.
It was weird. And then to have the human eyes behind it, instead of just having white eyes.
That's a very Barry Allen mask.
Sure, I don't know. In terms of animation.
And then it's sort of the next scene after him and Superman shaking from their club is he finally goes back to Iris with the ring that Steve kept trying to give to Diana. And the thing I kept getting back to is, I know I missed out on the Invincible show. You guys did a great job. Thanks for bringing in the adjunct Flanagan in my stead. But seeing another animated superhero sequence that's about relationship between a superhero and a normal person, and they're trying to make it work, and like Invincible does a pretty good job of making the case over and over again why that just simply can't really work, and then to have them just sort of gloss over it and be like, let's get married, yay, in this one, I was kind of it was a funny juxtaposition given the timing in which those two things both came out.
Overall, there was some real dodgy bits, especially in the third act, but I really liked watching it. It's just I wish it had stayed focused on the war.
Yeah, and I think we all went in with pretty high expectations for this one.
Yes,
like higher than usual.
Yes, you bought it. You never buy these. You rent
them. I bought it.
I would watch this again, though. That's how much I love the first two acts and the JSA characterizations. I would definitely watch this again.
Sure,
totally worth it. And so let's move on. We'll do ratings at the end. Let's move on to
Hashtag Fast Crab.
The Fast Crab was awesome.
It's so silly.
The showcase short. So, Ryan, you would not have seen this showcase short, correct?
Never do.
And Paul decided that he was going to buy the disc this time because the only way to get the shorts is to buy the disc. And this short was Command D. My whole life it was Command D, and you just can't change it in your head. Yeah. Command D, The Last Boy on Earth.
Command D.
Which I thought was terrific.
I think this is, and it's weird because I'm thinking about it and I'm like, I bought this disc. I will probably not watch this again. I'll probably watch the feature again, and then because I have the disc in, then I'll watch the Command D feature again. But like, you kind of watch it once and you're good. But I think from word go, this is such a lovely tribute to Kirby.
Oh yeah, the opening shot is totally him, his background, his
cover.
Yeah,
and it's in that style, and the lines are so thick, and then you go into it and it kind of evens out after a while.
Yeah, the thickness does, but the facial designs, while it wasn't as blocky as Kirby, they had the Kirby noses and the mouths more so than a normal animation. I need to back up for a second. I'm confused by what you said. Did you say you would never watch the Command D one again, or the feature again?
I would watch them again, but I'm just thinking realistically, this was like the first time I've used like a physical disc to watch something in months.
I see.
So like it's very rare for me to do. Like I'm
just trying to figure out your feelings on because like the vibe I got was you didn't like Command D.
I liked it. But it's like, and it's one of those things where it's like, I watch the premiere of a TV show and I'm like, I can't wait to watch the rest of the series. And I never do.
Right. Well, it ends on I would love to get more of it. I really liked it.
That is what I would like.
Yeah.
I think it would be cool if they did a series.
It's basically Command D and his tiger buddy and some other people who get caught by the animal overlords. And
what's his name? Ben?
It's a double B name.
Yeah.
They have to go through a series of challenges to win the prize, and the person who successfully goes through will win the prize. And Command D, of course, wins, and the prize is Superman's tunic. And he goes off to find Superman.
On his giant click-clack.
Benjamin Boxer is the guy. Benjamin Boxer. He's the robot guy.
And, yeah, he's, like, he can turn into different, or he, yeah, I guess he just turns into a robot.
Like, but I thought it was fun. I thought the ending was awesome with the Superman shirt and Commandy, you know, going off to, he's not going to give up. He's going to try to find Superman. And it ends on a, not a cliffhanger, but basically an open-ended ending.
Yeah, I love how, you know, like gung-ho Johnny Quest the character is. Yeah. And his goofy himbo long hair, like surfer boy looking thing. And then, like, I love all the animal people. I mean, that's why I love Commandy. I love... that it's like, okay, there's tiger people, and then there's that map is what I love.
Yeah.
The map of the world, and then it's broken up into the gorilla people and the dog people, and
I think if there's one thing that connects the Pick of the Week show to the Animation Brain Trust, it's the love of a good map, a fantasy map.
Come on, it's one of the best. I'm counting like Tolkien's hand-drawn stuff.
Yeah, maps.
It's like really well thought out and considers like the phases of the moon. I would take Kirby's crazy ass map with like oversized Madagascar or whatever, and all that just weird ideas that he, I don't know.
Do you feel good about having bought it?
Yeah.
You're okay with it? You don't feel like you made a mistake?
Yeah. I'm not going to buy all of these.
No.
I'm not getting back into buying each one.
Connor, sometimes you make a mistake.
Sometimes you make a mistake, and you got to just make that mistake.
Sometimes you make a mistake.
I thought it was fun. I thought it was really fun. I thought the ending was great. I thought the animation was good. I thought the designs were as Kirby-esque as we were going to get in like that kind of animation situation.
The crazy rat people, and they're gross. And it reminded me a lot of the, was it the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon? I'm probably getting that wrong. It's the one where he goes to another planet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Spider-Man Unlimited.
Yeah, that's the one. And it's very kind of rough looking.
That was the High Evolutionary, I believe.
Yes. So a lot of similarities with animal people. So it made me think of that. And that was a fun, weird show. And I love that they did that. And that's a fun thing to go on Wikipedia and read about.
Like a weird web cape.
Yeah. Mm. It's just strange. It was strange. It was a risky thing for them to do. And... so I would love to see this as like a series of Commandy on his giant grasshopper creature.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. But it's just little
going to find Superman.
Living our memories.
I mean, if you, Paul, are you? You're probably not far enough south that you're about to be hit with a trillion cicadas that you can.
My uncle was asking me about that, and I feel like they've said that the cicadas are not going to hit our particular area that hard.
I think you're safe from Brood X. The worst, I'm in the heart of it. I'm about to be dealing with a trillion bugs flying around screaming for sex until they die.
We get cicada killer wasps in our lawn, leave them alone. But my neighbor's afraid of them.
Well. I liked it. I thought it was a real solid short.
Yeah.
It really worked really well. So let's move on. I actually wasn't going to watch the featurette on Long Halloween because I started to see the trailer, and sometimes I feel like this featurette's spoiled too much, but I actually ended up watching it and really liked it and actually really excited for the movie.
Yeah, me too. I was like, Long Halloween is not among my favorite Batman stories, but I definitely love the art. And I was curious to see how that would translate. So I think without aping it all of the time, every frame, stylistically, aesthetically, I think they really capture something of the Tim Sale art.
It's the same style. Again, it's the heavy black outlines that we're having in this new era of animation.
It's less in the moment-to-moment.
No, I'm just saying it's also the similar. It doesn't look like... Right. JSA or Justice Society, but it has the same heavy black outlines as the art style.
That's awesome. And I think it's like it's in the atmosphere. Like they're going hard on the noirish look.
Yeah.
They showed some cityscapes of Gotham that were just really pretty.
Yeah, it looks great. It looks really
beautiful. Really nice. The color palette looks spot on. Big blocky characters
and a good voice cast.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it. I'm not always thrilled by these part one and part two. I understand why they do it. There's too much story, but you know, it just means it's hard. Part one's ultimately unsatisfying because you're only getting like an act and a half of a story, and then you have to wait for the second part.
Yeah, and the other thing that I have found that I've been frustrated by is when they adapt stories that are supposed to be a mystery. Mm-hmm. The last couple of ones we've reviewed. rewritten the ending in a way that I'm like, well, I'm glad I didn't just know the ending going into it, but most of the time it's been so long since I've read these comics, you could just pretty much straight up adapt them, and I probably wouldn't remember that well, because they also did it with Gotham by Gaslight. They completely changed the big reveal. And so I'm looking forward to it in that era. It's a story I remember enjoying. I'm probably not going to have time to reread it before the movie comes out. So I think it would be great if they just adapted it in a straightforward way, but they have a tendency to change parts of the mystery in ways that I don't think work as well.
And they speak to that.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're not going to do that, but they did say in this trailer that this is the most faithful adaptation they've done.
But they also say that they changed some things around.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You said even if you've read the book, you will still be surprised.
Yeah, it's going to be Hush all over again, I'm sure. Mm. But we'll see. I'm gonna try to reread it, because I haven't read The Long Halloween in 2 decades, probably.
My memory of Long Halloween was that reading it in graphic novel form, in collected form, you notice that it was written as a serial.
Right.
Because they keep recapping things that have happened. And you're like, yeah, I know. I read that
just read
5
it.
Pages ago.
Yeah.
And it's so they keep recapping. They're like, I think it's in Batman's narration, if memory serves. It's been a while. But I remember thinking like, oh, binge reading this is not how you're technically supposed to have read this.
But I also feel like Long Halloween came out in sort of the peak of the character narration in dialogue box, not in the thought balloon thing. Like, there was just a ton of that happening then. Like, it felt like every series you read had the main character thinking through the entire plot in caption boxes.
And that's something that's easily addressed in an adaptation like this.
That's it's also something just like a style of comic you don't see as much anymore.
Mm.
I think.
But I think it looks just really atmospheric and kind of cool, and I think maybe this might be the ideal situation where it's something that I didn't love, but I didn't like hate either, and they're going to make changes to it, so it's just keeping the best, like the stuff that I like, the artistic stuff that I liked from it. And Calendar Man looks super creepy.
Yeah, he did. Good voice cast they had showed. When they first announced it, I wasn't super psyched, but I was like, after it was over, I was like, oh, I
see that. Like, the more you hear about it, I was like, oh, yeah, I could see that. Titus Welliver,
the late Naya Rivera.
Yep.
Which was sad to see. Josh Duhamel as Harvey Dent. Billy Burke as Gordon.
Is that how you say his last name?
I don't know. Duhamel.
That's how Connor does.
So I
don't. My mom asked me the other day, because he's married to Fergie, right?
Right.
He was. I don't know if he still is.
Well, of all the things I don't know, that's a thing that is in my head forever. But I just know that.
Jensen Ackles is Batman. I thought he sounded good.
Yep. Hmm?
Billy Burke is Gordon, as I said, and Troy Baker as Joker. We'll get into that all. I'm not going to critique anything based off of a featurette. We'll see how it plays out when we actually watch it.
Titus Welliver is Falcone, and I just like seeing Titus Welliver in things, because I know he's a huge nerd.
He's crazy.
And he's got a bunch of hot toys in his house.
He's Bosch.
He's Bosch.
I love Bosch. Anyway, I'm excited. I'm legitimately excited for it. It comes out in June. It comes out pretty quick.
At the end of the preview, they're like, look for it.
Yeah, I love that.
They didn't have a date.
It's a really terrible tagline. Just look for it. Just look around and maybe you'll find it.
Of not giving us a release date when Calendar Man is in the movie.
Well, the irony of them having already announced it. Normally, you don't know the release date, but it's been announced. Like, it's out there. It's June.
If I could change anything, I would. When they have look for it real big on the screen, I'd have Fast Crab go shooting across the screen. Like 3D shooting right at you.
Oh, man, that was funny. Fast Crab was funny. Let's be honest. Let's all be honest.
They didn't animate the legs. He just...
When does it come out? I'm looking it up right now.
Look for it.
June 22nd is when the disc comes out for Batman The Long Halloween, so we'll be reviewing it sometime around that point. So it's pretty quick.
I like that we're getting more and more opportunities to come together as the Animation Brain Trust and talk about this stuff.
Correct. And
sorry, I missed Invincible, signs. But I basically would have just... you could have just played whatever Connor said twice, and that would have been a pretty good approximation of where I was at with Invincible.
Right. So we're in a good spot. I enjoyed Invincible. I enjoyed Justice Society for all of its problems. I'm looking forward to Long Halloween. Now, here's where it gets tough. I spent a lot of time thinking about this after watching the movie to get to ratings on Justice Society World War II. Ratings out of 5 stars. I can go first if you guys need some time.
Go ahead.
Here's how I broke it down. I gave the first 2 acts a 4.5, and I gave the 3rd act a 3. And so that mathematically comes to a 4.
Did you weight that? Like, is the first 2/3 weighted appropriately against the last third?
Well, I added them up, so I figured the total score was 12 and then divided by 3.
Well, that's okay. That's fair.
But I feel like 4 might be slightly too high, because I do think the 3rd act is kind of tough, so I might go 3.9.
Oh, 3.9, okay.
3.9.
I'm going 3.4, if we're getting that granular.
Ooh.
I think I'm going to go 4.1.
Ooh.
Just to average out Connor's 3.9.
Wow, look at that. Oh, listen, I think it's worth watching, especially if you're a JSA fan, just to see the JSA on the screen. I mean, again, we've seen them on the screen other times, but just to see them in their own animated film, I think the best part of the film is the JSA itself, the characterization, the action. If you're a JSA fan, it's worth checking down and watching. I'm sure it'll come to HBO Max eventually.
Just go get yourself an hour of Our Man. You deserve it.
And then we'll be
fun
back.
Fun music, fast crabs.
Fast crabs.
Just,
We will be back in about a month for Batman the Long Halloween. Until that time, I am Connor.
I'm Paul.
Paul, I'm looking at the maps, and you I think you might get some Brutex. I'll send you some recipes, but okay. I think it's important just to remember that on my world, the S stands for Shakespeare.
You were so excited to get to that point, weren't you?
I mean, that was an okay joke.
It was a good joke. I'm not saying that.
Because he couldn't jam, the captain seemed to understand. Because the next day the cap went out and drafted a band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. A toot, a toot, a toot, a toot, he blows it eight to the bar. In boogie rhythm, he can't blow a note unless the bass and guitar is playing with him. He makes a company jump when he plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.